Sota Perktes Mishnah Yudalid 9:14, the penultimate Mishnah of the Masechta, and one that is about various stages in history and certain gezeras, enactments that Chazal made. The first part of it, the Mishnah says, is Befulmus Shel Aspasianus Gazru Al Atros Chasanim Vala Eros. The Vartner learns, like Rashi, that Fulmos refers to a military campaign, and Aspianos is the Hebrew version of Vespasian. Vespasian is the Roman general who began the campaign against Israel in the year 68 of the Common Era. He ended up beginning that siege of Yerushalayim in the year 70, but he ended up, when he heard that Nero died as emperor, he went to go to Rome to become the new emperor, with the famous story there we have about Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai. So this first stage here is when Jerusalem was feeling already the pressure from the first stage under Vespasian. So they made a gezira al atros chasanim, a prohibition against bridegrooms wearing a certain kind of crown on their heads on the day of their wedding. There's a discussion in the Gemara exactly like what these crowns are made of and what are included in the prohibition. Let's say all things is the halacha, like Levi, so meaning they didn't wear any crowns anymore. Vala Eros. Eros is a kind of musical instrument. It doesn't have a name in English, I don't think. It's kind of, think of like a tambourine, but just with one bell on it, a single bell. All the more so a tambourine would seem to be forbidden. Befulmos Shel Titus. Then in the military campaign of Titus, Titus was the son of Vespasian, who continued where Vespasian left off, and Titus was the one who ultimately was responsible for the sacking of Yerushalayim, then the destruction of the second base of Mikdash. So during his military campaign, Gazru al Atros Kalos, they made an enactment forbidding brides to wear like a certain kind of crown. The Gemara explains this to be like the Ir Shel Zahav, that golden city that we saw back in Masechta Shabbos, that you couldn't wear on Shabbos necessarily. But the point is that the Mishnah here is saying that at least brides couldn't wear those on their wedding day, crowns like the Ir Shel Zahav and other kinds of crowns. Vishlo Yilamed Adam Espino Yavanis. And also they made a separate enactment that you can't teach your child Yavanit. Now, Yavanit means Greek, but we're not talking about the Greek language, as the Gemara makes it perfectly clear. Learning the Greek language, speaking the Greek language, that's not a prohibition. It's some kind of, as the Rambam explains in the Perish Mishnayos, some kind of like sign language, or the kind of, you know, unspoken, you know, gesticulated way of communicating that has been lost to us. But in the time of the Mishnah, the Greeks had this kind of sign language that was used in diplomacy. And as the story goes, and the Mishnah, the Gemara, should say, speaks out this the Braisa and the following story. I'm going to tell you the story, because the Gemara does, but I want to make something clear to you. The story I'm about to tell you is happens more than a century before the coming of Titus. Okay, so that needs to be reconciled, and we'll do that at the end. But just first, the story, which I think is quite a famous story, it says that when these two brothers, Aristobulus and Hyrcanus, fomented a civil war amongst the Jews, they were the sons of Shamsin Hamalka, who was a good queen. She actually was the last ruler of independent Judea. The sister of Shimon ben Shetach, she was good, but she was married to Alexander Yanai, who was a bad guy. In any case, so when Alexander Yanai died, he said that she should become the regent and not their good-for-nothing kids. And she ruled, she was great. But when she died, her two kids, so they basically had a civil war over who should be the next leader. Hyrcanus was the less bad of the two. Aristobulus, like his father, was the more bad of the two. Aristobulus ended up getting control of the temple area in Yerushalayim, and then Hyrcanus made a siege around it. And every day, while under siege, the people inside the temple area inside Yerushalayim would lower down like a basket with money inside of it, and then the people on the outside, under Hyrcanus would put two sheep inside, which would be raised back up over the walls to be brought as the Tamidin. And then some guy seeing this going on the walls, who knew the secret Yavanese sign language technique, he communicated to the people outside that as long as they keep on sending these sheep into Yerushalayim, so then they'll never be able to overcome the Jews on the inside, because the Jews on the inside are protected by the zechus of the Tabidin, the daily offerings. And therefore, the next day, when the people on the inside with Aristobulus lowered the basket, instead of putting in two sheep, they put in a pig. And then that day, the halfway up, it says that it stuck its little swine hooves into the walls of the of Yerushalayim, and Eretz Yisrael shook 400 parsals, and they made it right then and there. And that time, the rabbi said, cursed is anyone who raises pigs in Israel, and cursed anyone who teaches his son this Chochmei Yavanis, this secret sign language of the from the Greeks. So that's the story. Now, I told you that story happened. Like, what happened was these two fools brought in Pompey from Rome to help settle their dispute, and that was really, Rome came in, and that was at the end of independence in Eretz Yisrael. That happened in the year 67 BC. So the story is not the same time as a story that would happen with Titus. So Tosus has one answer. One of Tosus' answers is that back then, like 100 and whatever years previous, they made this enactment, but no one paid it too much heed. And then in the time when this almost repeated itself, new people are on the walls in Yerushalayim, I guess they said, that's it. And they took it seriously. And then the enactment was kept, that no longer were people teaching their sons this Chochmei Yavanis. Let's go with that pshat. This is difficult to reconcile. They're different gersos. Titus could be Kitus, which would be a different, Quietus was a different Roman leader, actually in the Hadrianic persecution times. So that's a different gersa. Rashi has seems to have a different timeline altogether, perhaps, that would align with that. But whatever it is, we'll go with this shot here that I just said. And then the third part of the Mishnah says, "Bepulmus ha'acharon," on the final campaign, which Barthner understands would be referring to post Chorban, meaning the same as like that meaning. So fine, they're different because of different gersos and different shittas, and what pulmus means are different shittas. Exactly what time we're speaking about here, but in the final campaign. So again, let's talk. Let's assume that means in the time of the Chorban. So then, Gazu shlo teitze hakala ba'pirion besocha ir. They made a separate enactment that a bride shouldn't go out in an apirion within the city. Now, apirion is a word which is not familiar. I can translate it for you, but you still have to probably Google it to see what I'm talking about with the translation. Probably the best translation is palanquin, P-A-L-A-N-Q-U-I-N. But basically what that is, if you don't have access to figure out what that is, it's essentially some kind of like closed-in litter, think of like a stretcher almost, but it has a box on top of it, and it's covered, and the bride would be inside, and she would be transported by people being held up by, like, say, the four poles of this palanquin. So that was part of the wedding celebrations, and they said that the kala should not go out, the bride should not go out in this palanquin anymore, in the apirion, within the city. However, says the Mishnah, notwithstanding that, which was an attempt to reduce the simcha that was associated with weddings, still v'rabosenu hitiru sheteitzei hakala ba'pirion besocha ir. Subsequently, the Rambam learns in the parish, this is talking about in the time of Reb Yud Nasi, so that's 100 and whatever, 30 years later, he decreed that they should be allowed to go, and his thought was, it was much more tsanua for a bride who everyone's looking at to be inside this, you know, this thing which is covered in kind of golden tapestries and stuff like that, which would keep her sort of out of the public eye and more tsanua than having her be out in the open. So they reinstated the apirion for the brides to go to their weddings.